This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and I'm actually leaving work a little bit early today because we have a wedding. My wife has two nephews, and the younger nephew is getting married this weekend. So my wife is playing for the wedding, and I am singing for the wedding, and so we're going to turn it into a two-day trip going down there. It's in Lawton, Oklahoma, which isn't that far, but my daughter and granddaughter are coming along as well, so we're going to do it in two segments to kind of ease the travel time a little bit. So we're going to try to get away a little bit early today and get down there to where it's not too late for the grand baby. And she is a grand baby, so not so much of a baby anymore. She's over 2 years old now, so she's jabbering and we're just having all kinds of fun with her. It's been a good week. Everything's been puttering along. Been trying to close some things up with the current project I'm working on because we are coming to the end of my time estimate for that. There were a couple of little extra things that got added to the project, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. I think we're going to come in just fine, and the users have been apparently happy with the work. They seem to be pretty pleased, and so that's always good when the users are happy. I've been writing along on the final book in the Grumpy Old Prophets series. This past week, I haven't gotten much traction on it. I know where I'm going. I know what I need to do. And I was hoping this week to get cleared away with another chapter before the weekend. But with all the stuff that's coming up and all the events of the week, it's just not going to happen. I am going to take my laptop with me. So hopefully I'll get this chapter cleared out of the way. This is the one on Pentecost. So the birth of the church is usually what we call it. So it's going to be a good chapter. And then I don't know that there are too many more chapters going out. After this, I've just got a few other little things to say. And then I think we're done. Now it's just a question of figuring out exactly where it's going to land and what are going to be the final outs on it. I'm having a little squeaking in my car that I need to go check out. So if you hear something going, that's my car. So I need to, hopefully it's not a wheel bearing and my wheel is about to fall off. But anyways, had a good week talking with friends as well. I had a couple of friends that we couldn't get together, but had a real nice conversation Friday morning with a buddy, and then one of my beta readers, who is also a long time friend, he wanted to get together to chat about the book, and so we got together on Friday, had a great lunch together. Always enjoy getting together with him, and he's really good. He's like a fellow nitpicker, so he's really good about about pointing things out. One of them is he said I had used the term pickpockets, and I had also mentioned that Mary Magdalene had a vial of nard in her pocket in her dress, and he said pockets weren't actually invented till the 1700s. So we gotta change that, but that's fine. That's why I have beta readers. So that all went well, and I think we're getting close now. I sent out a reminder last weekend to my beta readers that it was coming up close to the time that it's going to be over. It's August the 17th is when everything is going to wrap up. So I will send one more reminder next weekend and then a sort of final it's now reminder. And hopefully, within about 2 weeks after that, we'll have beta books. Ooh. Maybe it'll be mid-September, because I still have a bit of writing to do before the new betas are ready for the last book. We will see. Depends on how well it goes over the next few weeks. So, anyways, all of that is going fine. Let's see if there's anything else. I don't know if there's anything else that's been going on this week. Obviously, one of the big things that happened in this past week, and it happened right after last Thursday, happened right after the last podcast, was I got up Friday morning getting ready for breakfast with my friend and checked the news as I usually do and started reading about the attack in Aurora, Colorado, with the gunman who went into the theater at the midnight showing of Batman and started shooting people. And it's been very interesting to watch that all unfold. And to see the different reactions to it and how people choose to characterize it. One of the things that I talk about in Still Whispers is that whenever there is any kind of disaster, there's usually a question that comes out. How could a kind and loving God let this happen? And we've talked in previous podcasts about my own views on evil in the world. That's a huge philosophical discussion. How could a good God allow evil in the world? And I won't recap all of that, but it basically, for me, comes down to free will. If you're going to allow free will, well, it basically comes down to a couple of things. First of all, it comes down to a natural world where there are elements of chance and where things are not safe. If, when we're raising our children, we put them in an environment that's completely safe, that's not necessarily the best thing for them. Sometimes you gotta bump your head into a few things. Sometimes you gotta struggle a little bit, because it's within that struggle that you get stronger. There is a really interesting movie, I've talked about it before, called Catfish. And I really can't talk about this without ruining the punchline for people. In essence, the theme of the movie comes down to, how shall I say? The theme of the movie comes down to, some people exist for nothing more than to stir up the rest of us to help us deal with conflict. Which, maybe that's a good enough explanation. If you haven't seen Catfish, you should watch Catfish. Great movie. Just stick with it. You're going to be watching the first 30 to 40 minutes and thinking, I don't care, I don't care, I don't care. And then it gets really, really interesting. So just stick with it. If you start watching Catfish, stick with it, 30, 40 minutes. But when we're talking about suffering in the world, there is a certain type of suffering that is caused just by our environment. Earthquakes, tsunamis, typhoons, forest fires, those kind of things. And that's the world we live in. It is not safe. But its lack of safety makes us strong. And it causes us to flex our fortitude. And it causes us to flex our trust. And it causes us to flex our resourcefulness. And in that, that actually ends up being a good thing. But of course, there's other kind of suffering that is caused by other people. And sometimes our reaction to that is, well, why doesn't God just stop them from making all those people suffer? And as I've talked about before, this really comes down to free will. If you're God and you're going to allow free will in the world, you have to allow for the fact that people are going to be ugly to other people. Now then, having said that, though, I am a firm believer in the principle that we should wait to pass judgment on God and his unfairness until we have a chance to actually gather the data. Because as I talk about, in the chapter God on Trial in Still Whispers, we immediately, when something like this happens, immediately trot out, oftentimes, and say, oh, see, God's either not kind or he doesn't know what's going on because he would have stopped that from happening. Well, he's not going to stop it from happening because of free will, but a lot of times what he does do is he gives us hints ahead of time that it's coming. That he tries to communicate with us ahead of time that it's coming. And it's only after 6 weeks, after 10 weeks, after 12 weeks, after 6 months, after all the data is in, do we come to the point where we realize, oh yeah, this was preventable. We've seen the first hint of that in the Colorado shooting at this point. Because apparently, the shooter sent a notebook to a psychiatrist describing how he was going to shoot people. Now, whether that had a chance of actually making a difference or not, I don't know. But I will guarantee you that somewhere, somebody had a whisper that, maybe you shouldn't sell this weaponry to this guy, or maybe you should let somebody know that this guy has just bought 10,000 rounds of ammunition, or however much it was. You know, maybe. And all of those things go unheard. And while God is trying to reach and trying to cause there to be a different outcome within the provenance of free will, we just ignore him and go our merry way. The other thing that often bubbles up in these situations where you have this lone guy who seemed like he was okay and then suddenly went off the deep end, it's a comment that I got when I was talking to an acquaintance. Just as we were chatting about this situation, sorry, it's been a long week. And the comment was, well, that guy's demon-possessed. And I said, you know, I don't really think he's demon-possessed. Yeah, that guy, you know, a normal human being couldn't do that. There's a couple of very interesting things about that attitude. First of all, if you look at some of the interesting psychological studies that are done, a normal human being could do that, given the right influences and inputs. One of the startling studies, and I forgot the name of the guy who did the study, but it was the study where they bring people in, sit them down in front of this machine, and they're supposedly asking questions of someone in another room, and when the person in the other room doesn't get a question right, then they shock that person. It's just an actor over there, nobody's really getting shocked. And they're supposed to crank up the dial, and the dial goes to like 450 volts, which is lethal. And the people are told that will be lethal. But when they have an authority figure telling them what they're supposed to do, and if they hesitate at all, the authority figure says, you must continue. People, a large percentage of people, I forget exactly what percentage, but it was over 50%, will actually keep cranking up the dial all the way to 450 volts, and they will press the button. So there's that factor. The other thing that you can factor in with psychological studies is actually something that I saw done. I talked last week a little bit, or the week before last, maybe it was last week, about Darren Brown, who's a mentalist, does some pretty interesting things. He had another episode on Hulu. And in this episode, he had a young woman who had agreed to participate on his show. So he takes her into this room. He's got this box, like a terrarium box in it, that has a metal grating on the floor. And he points to these wires coming out of the wall, and he says, that's the main feed for the house, electricity. We said, we've got this box wired up. Here's this big red button. The object of this game is for you to not kill the kitten who is inside this terrarium. This cute little kitten in there is walking around going, meow, meow, meow. And her whole job is she's just not supposed to push the red button. And what he was trying to show is the power of negative suggestion over us. When you tell kids, don't do that, don't do that, that's all they can think about. That's all they want to do. Don't do that. Why? Well, for the same reason that this gunman picked up a gun and he went in. It's flesh. And when you really begin to understand the depths of destruction that are at work in the flesh, and it's the desire it has to destroy, it makes perfect sense that you can take seemingly sane, rational people and simply by putting an authority figure behind them, get them to crank a dial up to 450 volts and hit a button to supposedly shock a guy to death in another room. And it makes perfect sense when you watch the turmoil that this sweet young lady is in this room. Now, Darren Brown did do a couple of things. He tried to put her in a state of mind where she went back to her childhood. And he did that by offering her a drink that is typically a childhood drink. He did it by treating her in a very authoritative manner, you know, slapping the table, ordering her to do things, having her draw pictures of the cat. It was really fascinating to watch that. And then, as he leaves the room, he says, remember, don't kill the kitten. Don't press the button. I don't know, something like that. And she agonizes and agonizes and agonizes over this. And there's a clock, and it's counting down, and it's counting down. And she's playing with the kitten, and she keeps looking at the clock, and she keeps looking at the clock, and she keeps looking at the clock. And he's already told her, if you don't kill the kitten, I'll give you 500 pounds. Don't kill the kitten. But the flesh within her rears up. No one is going to tell me what to do. And sure enough, with just a second left, she goes over there and slaps the button. And alarms go off, and the room goes dark, and then she starts sobbing. Because she thinks she's killed the kitten. That's flesh. That is that thing that eats at us and eats at us and says, come on, do it, do it, do it, do it! I think it's well able to convince a guy who's an intelligent guy, seemingly a nice guy, it's well able to push him and push him and push him over to the place that he straps on body armor and walks into a theater and starts shooting people up. It's well able to do that. And frankly, I think it's well able to do that in almost everyone. One of the conveniences of saying, oh, I think that guy was demon-possessed, is that we can make him other. He's not us. He's them. And we would never do that. So we don't have to face the destroyer that is within us. But by not facing the destroyer that is within us, we allow the destroyer to operate in a freer fashion. I personally think that by recognizing how much the flesh is dedicated to our destruction and to the destruction of all everything around us, it puts us on notice. And if we recognize that and understand that that is within us, then maybe we just don't flit into suggestions without thinking about them a little bit. Why is the flesh trying to get me to do X? And is that really something I want to do, or is it a part of the bigger plan that the flesh has to bring destruction in my life? It's interesting because after one of these situations, then without really understanding the cause of the situation, society typically tries to figure out, okay, so how do we stop this from happening again? And the typical response is, let's make more laws. Let's put in more regulation. Or let's give everybody guns. I mean, there's all kinds of swings back and forth. But none of that stuff is ultimately going to be successful because none of it actually addresses the root problem. Because the root problem is that we all have a flesh within us that's attempting to destroy everything it can. I'm getting my mail. One moment. And if you don't deal with that, it's not going to do you any good to put into play more gun control laws because people will just figure out how to get around them. Just like they had footage of a guy meeting a hidden camera reporter in a parking lot. I just saw it this last week. And the guy had a 50 caliber sniper rifle that he was selling. This is completely illegal. I'm backing into my garage. To sell this gun, because this gun can take down a plane. I'm not supposed to be selling this, and this guy's selling it out of the back of his truck. So we got all the gun control laws. And we can have all the more gun control laws. And it's not ultimately going to make any difference because the people who are going to move on the suggestions of their flesh are going to find a way to find a gun. And frankly, I don't think it's going to help much to give everybody guns either because all we're going to end up with is people shooting each other because the flesh will get them to shoot each other through fear and through misunderstandings and through anger. So the answers really don't lie in trying to legislate something from the outside. The only true antidote to the flesh, the only true behavioral change that really makes a difference is when we come to an understanding of flesh and spirit, is when we come to an understanding of the power of love to help us create an environment of success in ourselves, an environment of success in the people around us. We come to an understanding that there is a higher power within us that wishes to help us with that. And then ultimately, we come to an understanding of who God is and who Jesus Christ is. And we live within the power of His love. And live within the wonderful understanding that it's all us and that He loves us all and that we are all working for each other. And we start putting into practice some of the principles that He talked about on the Sermon on the Mount, that we should be peacemakers, that we should be meek, that we should hunger and thirst after righteousness, that we should be poor in spirit, that we should turn the other cheek, that we should go a second mile with anybody who compels us to go one, that we should love our neighbors. Those are the things that then put us into a place where we are stronger in resisting the deceptions of the flesh. And until we get that, this stuff is going to keep happening. Doesn't matter how many laws we put in place, and it doesn't matter how many guns we put in people's hands to try to stop it from happening. It's going to keep happening. Because ultimately, we have to change the insides of people. And the only way really to do that is with some sort of spiritual experience. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.